The Mask of Femininity. There is virtually no difference between an unmade-up, bald, naked woman and an unmade-up, bald, naked man, except their reproductive organs. Any other difference between them is artificially produced. A man becomes a man because he develops his intelligence and, through its development, his productivity. His appearance changes very little. A woman becomes a woman by means of gradual stultification and by deliberately transforming her external appearance. And this differentiation between the sexes is prompted exclusively by women. As we have said, a man is considered masculine only after a series of manipulations on the part of women. A woman, on the other hand, is the author of her own transformation and produces femininity by means of cosmetics, hairstyle, and clothes. This femininity, synthetic in origin, consists of two different components: emphasis on secondary sexual characteristics and distancing herself by means of masks. Woman makes use of various types of masks in order to make the difference between herself and a given man as conspicuous as possible. The first component serves to make her desirable to man, the second to make her mysterious to him. She herself thus creates the equivocal unknown opposite sex, making it easier for him to accept his enslavement. Thanks to the wide range of possible transformations each woman can offer a man, and a real woman varies her looks just a little every day, she keeps him in a state of constant bewilderment. She will maneuver the man into an untenable position, all the time skillfully distracting his attention from the stench of a rotting mind beneath the pleasing mask. Woman regards her natural self merely as the raw material of a woman. Not the raw material, but the end result has to be judged. Unmade up, without curls and bracelets and necklaces, women are not yet really present. This explains why they do not mind running around in curlers or with cold cream on their faces. It is not they at this stage. They are still occupied with the process of becoming them. They succeed with this sort of make-believe all the more easily because they are not hampered by any kind of intelligence. No effort is so great that woman will not make it in order to achieve this metamorphosis. No makeup can cost too much or take too long to put on when it is a question of the final product which will distinguish them so markedly from men. By rubbing cream into their skins, they make them smoother than men's. Their hair is curled or worn long for the same reason. They do not put black mascara around their eyes for the sake of beauty. It is to make their eyes differ from male eyes. Strange, mysterious, disturbing. All this was the original purpose of the female masquerade, but it has almost been forgotten now. In the course of the last few decades, the average middle-class married woman has developed from a rather busy domestic servant into a kind of demi-mondaine, well padded with the comforts provided by men. As a result of this, her former games, which were for the specific purpose of transforming her appearance, have become an end in themselves. And since amusing themselves with their own bodies is their favorite game, and well-to-do middle-class wives frequently have nothing else to do, they occupy themselves in this way. What is more, they are encouraged to do so by men. After all, it is men who manufacture their cosmetics, design their fashions and hairstyles, and make a living by doing so. They do their best to provide these women with new variations, helped by the editors of women's magazines and by women's radio programs. In fact, women have almost succeeded in producing a totally new feminine culture, a sort of women's arts and crafts. In this sanctuary, they live among themselves, disturbed by none, being led to heights, or rather into depths, where no man can follow, apart from those specialized slave laborers mentioned above. "Take care your lips stay smooth," advises, for example, one well-known magazine, This to a woman who complained of badly chapped lips. Brush your lips daily with a wet toothbrush and use a lip salve with regularity. Never use pearl lipsticks. They settle more easily into the cracks. Don't forget to take your measurements, the editor goes on to advise all women. Your pelvic dimensions should never be more than 9 inches larger than your waist, nor 3.5 inches more than your bust. Always brush your eyebrows into a becoming sweep before outlining them in pencil, and never draw them in with one straight arch. Instead, follow each hair with a separate stroke. It will look completely natural if the lines are vertical nearest the bridge of the nose and carefully toned with two different colors, for instance, gray and brown mixed together. Always keep a mirror in your kitchen. It will help you to control your face. You will notice if you frown or make faces while you are cooking or if your hair is in disarray. Women are grateful for all these rules. They have not enough imagination to think them out for themselves. They follow them religiously, measuring their pelvic dimensions, brushing their lips, outlining their eyebrows, and hanging up little mirrors in the kitchen to avoid wrinkles caused by thinking. And when they have done all that, more fun and games are waiting. There are actually women today who bathe their breasts daily in cold water for 10 minutes.
It makes them firm,
you see. There are women who oil their bodies all over every morning and not following medical advice. There are those who twist their hair around 30-odd curlers every few days and spend at least half an hour making up their eyes. And as they, thanks to all these efforts, which a man feels are totally absurd anyhow, grow stranger, more incalculable, and more feminine with each passing day, it is often precisely this type of woman who attracts the most willing slaves. In the meantime, the game goes on. Anyone who wants to join in the game, to keep up with the coterie, has to observe more and more rules. For women's demands on each other are enormous. Men have long since dropped out of the game. The opportunities for entertainment offered by one's body have increased enormously and will go on doing so, though, of course, it is inevitable that many women cannot keep up the pace. These will return to their other source of entertainment, the home. As the amount of money available to women depends on the husband's income, women are divided into classes. There are those who have an excellent mask, those whose mask is good, and those whose masquerade is merely adequate. And thanks to the constant efforts of their public relations organizations, provide a kind of vicarious gratification for them. Even for a woman with an average type of mask, the rules are getting more and more complicated. If she goes swimming, for example, her makeup must be waterproof, her legs and armpits hairless, her body oiled, and her hair completely hidden by a cap covered with rubber flowers. For the supermarket, a matte base with a dab of rouge and light brown mascara is the thing. Funerals require a pale makeup to enhance the effect of her black lace mantilla and an almost invisible lipstick. For a few minutes at a cocktail party, the preparations of dressing and makeup will take hours. There was a time when only one shade of eyeshadow was sufficient. Now it must be three. White, gold, and green, for example. Her lips must be cared for with salves, lip liners, mother-of-pearl lipstick, and powder. False eyelashes, no longer stuck on in one strip, must be carefully gummed in position one by one. That is more natural. Her own coiffure must be embellished with an additional hairpiece, and both must always be freshly shampooed and curled. For eye makeup alone, the following are basic essentials: false eyelashes, a special glue, tweezers for putting the lashes in place, mascara, eyeliner, 3 shades of eyeshadow, 2 shades of eyebrow pencil, powder for the brows, plus a specially angled brush for application, a small brush for the eyebrows, oil-based pads for removing the makeup, and special cream to soothe the eyes. Men adore their women and want them to be divine, exotic, iridescent. that is, feminine. At the same time, they have no desire to watch their hours of slavish, narcissistic primping and are getting more and more uncomfortable. They will never understand the pleasure a woman takes in housework, and to them the makeup process is just as degrading. Every man knows that he himself could not care less if a woman wears three colors of eyeshadow or one, just as he knows he has no need of lace curtains or rubber plants in the living room. But he appreciates that other men or society demand this of a woman, and he feels intensely sorry because he believes himself to be responsible for this denigrating state of affairs. Since he realizes that he and the other members of his sex are interested only in woman's external appearance, for what else is there to interest him, he assumes that his wife's tireless efforts to make herself into an object of desire and to create a certain mystique by means of makeup, which, however, should not be exaggerated, are the signs of an excessive zeal to please him. Of course he feels guilty, and rather touched. He believes he is suppressing all her worthwhile qualities, which are, in fact, nowhere to be found. As usual, he is missing the truth by a hair's breadth. It is in his own interest to deny the fact that this whole development is tantamount to the highest level of feminine culture, and that women do not, by means of fashion and cosmetics, make themselves into objects, but rather their ceaseless preoccupation with such matters corresponds to the mental activities of infinitely primitive subjects. And there is something else he does not know. A woman does not only recreate herself from day to day, so to speak, getting further and further away from her true self, just for the sake of entertainment. This cult satisfies her minimal need for a religion as well, a need which, as we have already seen, depends on her low level of intelligence. Every step in this process of transformation requires a totally neutral critical observation of self. It forces a woman to regard herself constantly with the eyes of a female stranger and to test the results of her labors in terms of that onlooker's eyes 1,000 times a day. If the transformation is a success in those critical eyes, if it passes criticism, she can, still in the eyes of the stranger, indulge in unrestrained self-admiration. Thanks to this trick, she is, as it were, in a position to worship at her own feet, and is therefore, to a large extent, exempt from every system designed to satisfy a man's pleasure in non-freedom. Systems such as ideologies, religions, or glorifications of some other being. Women are so preoccupied with self and with beautification that men come to the logical conclusion that even if women paid any attention to them, they would never be considered handsome. There is an old saying that men do not need to be good-looking. Many men will, without arrière-pensée, repeat this piece of wisdom. But even if he made an effort, woman would never find man handsome. How could woman, who takes such pleasure in her own ridiculous masquerade, appreciate an unmade-up, conventionally dressed man? What else would this be but the first step, the raw material, the preliminary sketch for a further stage in human development? In a sense, this implies that all men must be ugly in woman's eyes, and this frees her to choose according to his income and the standard of living he may be able to offer her. Particularly sensitive men seem to have realized this recently and are trying to become beautiful according to the standards of women and, for once, make an impression on them by means of their outward appearance. In the main, however, these attempts to break away from convention have been doomed to failure. In the first place, men could hardly achieve something overnight which women have been cultivating for centuries. Man's long hair is never as silky, nor his skin as delicate as a woman's. His clothes will never be so exquisitely extravagant. And in the second place, the vast armies of enslaved men have thrown these deserters out of their ranks and shut them off from earning a proper living. Today there are few men who wear a mask. Those who do, poets, painters, rock musicians, journalists, actors, hippies, photographers need just this sort of disguise in order to earn their money, rather as a kind of contemporary court jester. Of course, most of these men have a woman around, someone to put his earnings to immediate use. A poet has his muse, a painter his model, a rock musician his groupie. All of these women live off men. If all men took to growing their hair long or to wearing chains with pendants around their necks, which, after all, is possible, for every 100 years or so there have been slight changes in men's fashions due to changed working conditions, their long hair would be cut to a uniform length and those chains around their necks would become a replacement for ties, just as discreet and inconspicuous.